Hey, I'm Michaela LaFrac, the host of Vermont Edition. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Some Vermont school districts are still trying to pass their school budgets a month after town meeting day. Eight are voting on spending plans today. Our newsroom is closely following these stories. On Vermont Edition today, we're going to hone in on a bright spot in education out of Randolph Union High School in Orange County. There, counselors and teachers are trying to sort through a complicated question together. How do they help graduating seniors who are going on to college or trade school stay in school and graduate? But first, I'm joined in the studio by Randolph's school counselor, Kara Merrill. She launched a mentor pilot program last year to support low-income students in their transition to college. Kara, welcome.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
We're glad to have you. And we are also joined on the line by Mary Sell. She's a multilingual learner specialist for Orange Southwest School District and Two Rivers Supervisory Union. She works with students from pre-K through 12th grade, and she's a mentor in the program that Kara started. Welcome, Mary.
Thanks so much for having us, Michaela.
Yeah, we're glad to have you both. And listeners, if you work as a mentor to kids in high school, or you had a mentor, maybe a teacher or a counselor at that age who really meant a lot to you, give us a call and tell us about them. Our number is 800-639-2211. Kara, first, let's start with a little bit of background on Randolph Union High School. What's the student population like? What's the school like?
Okay, so I've been at Randolph for 16 years, and we are a community that has one bigger elementary school that's located right in Randolph and two very small rural schools, Braintree and Brookfield Elementary Schools. We have a technical career center attached to our high school, and our student body 7 through 12 is about 400 students.
And what exactly is your job there? I know that a school counselor often does a lot more than simply sitting in a room with one student and counseling them.
So I'm the director of student services, and I work specifically with grades 10 through 12. In terms of my role as the director, I help connect kids to different student support services. We have an SAP, a student assistant program director. We have a person who's in charge of multi-tiered supports. We have a licensed mental health counselor on staff and another school counselor, as well as a nurse and a nurse practitioner. So I oversee a department that's looking at how we can best serve our students through all of those resources.
Wow. And Mary, you also wear many hats. Tell us a little bit about your work.
My work with my students involves working with their families as well. I provide not only support in school with English language acquisition, but with advocacy for the students and their families, kind of like Kara, connecting them to some services and supports that they might benefit from.
And you work with a number of different schools and two school districts, right?
Yes, I work for a total of six schools, and in probably over 20 different spaces. I do some pull out, mostly push into the classroom to work with my students, and I collaborate with teachers and administrations.
Well, that's a lot. And I imagine both of you are doing a lot of collaboration with adults and with kids as well. Kara, when we first spoke, you told me a little bit about Randolph's student population and rates of going on to post-secondary education. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. I think something that defines Randolph and has for the last 12 to 15 years has been our dogged approach, persistent approach to making sure our students graduate from high school. We took a look at our graduation rate about 12 years ago and noticed that we are below the state average, and we made a strategic goal to change that. And one of our primary ways of changing that was to look at our connections or relationships with students, and specifically try to make sure that every student had at least one adult who they felt connection with within our school building. In terms of our post-secondary rates, our school is pretty average or a little below average, and our students are attending two-year or four-year programs. Between 45% and 50% of our students are doing that. The good news in terms of our graduation rate is we, since creating that strategic goal, we've not only met the goal of hitting the state average, but we're actually now exceeding the state goal, the state average. So we are graduating about 88% to 90% of our students, sometimes upwards of 92%, 93% of our students. So we have really made a huge gain there. And the goal is to try to help that as kids go on to college.
Right. So the relationship with the kids doesn't end when they go off to post-secondary. You're just staying connected with them. Tell us about this program that you started, this pilot program.
I think it started back in 2019 when I specifically saw a group of students who were first-generation students heading off to different schools, many of them with full scholarships, or at least tuition-free scholarships, meaning they didn't have to pay for any of their tuition, just their room and board. So money wasn't necessarily an issue. However, they are first-generation students, so their parents hadn't gone to college. And I just noticed that some of them were circling back to those adults at Randolph who'd meant something to them or had that close working relationship with them and asking for help. And it was really challenging, especially as a school counselor, to have multiple kids like that calling, emailing me, texting me, trying to get in touch with me as they were transitioning to college. Yet I still had my entire caseload of students who were in high school. And I started identifying that these kids had this comfort to ask me questions, but they hadn't made that leap in finding an adult or a supportive person at their college to ask those same questions. And I think colleges, when you come from a small rural high school where there's one central office in terms of student services, they know where to go. At the college level, there are lots of different support services, but often in different spaces. There might be a counseling office, there's an academic support office, there might be a TRIO office. There are different offices that all colleges have, but they might not all be located in the same place, and there are multiple people who would help you. And so for some of these students who have always just relied on an individual who they really have a close connection with and they feel comfortable asking for help from that person, then to try to figure out and navigate the bureaucracy of a college campus feels overwhelming, and they were relying back on that person at the high school level. The idea of my program is maybe we should look at that for a year, and that individual at the high school level, if they are held accountable to that help by being named a mentor and articulated as such, both in name and given a small stipend, they can actually help transition the student to finding those supports on their specific college campus.
Mm. And you've received funding for this program so that you can provide those stipends.
Yes. So I came up with this idea, and I spoke with and then created a pilot proposal for with the McClure Foundation. And the McClure Foundation is funding us for at least one pilot year as part of their work to make post-secondary education the easy choice for graduating high school seniors. And the McClure Foundation in general tries to fund good ideas across the state. And they wanted to give us the chance to see what this idea might look like, what our data might come back with. It's small, but to design and test a program and then see what happens.
Mm. Fascinating. Well, Mary, I know that you have a mentee in the program and have talked to a lot of students who are making that sometimes tough transition from high school to college. Tell us a bit about some of the stories you heard from your students about what their needs are.
The needs that I see are seeking out the academic support that they need, seeking out connection as far as friends and mentors go. My student goes to UVM and has access to a great program that they have, a mentorship program called Young Men of Talent. And so trying to connect with those programs to kind of bridge the gap so that when my support's no longer available, there's additional support in place. And so that program is for, I think it's Black and Latino males who are in college, to help them succeed at college because of statistically that population not succeeding as they should. And so he's able to access that program. He's able to access help from the academic services. He received help from Beth Clay, who was not able to be here, who works for VSAC. And she does support for the families to apply for financial aid and continued support for the students throughout the college process.
And how did you get to know this student that you're now serving as an official mentor for?
My position is unique in that I get to work with my students for a number of years. The way that the ELL programs work in the state for multilingual learners is they are provided services until they test out. And even beyond that, they are still monitored for 2 years. And even beyond that 2 years, services can be reinstated anytime that second language acquisition is suspected to be, or additional language acquisition is suspected to be in any way interfering with their ability to succeed to the level that they want to. And so I'm able to work. I've worked with him since he was in fifth grade.
Wow. That's a long connection. That's remarkable.
Yeah. And I have a connection with siblings, too. So I have a really strong connection with the family as well. So that all really helps in this process.
And I'm curious to hear from you, Mary, about something that Kara brought up. Pressure that I think can exist for a lot of educators to, you know, continue to provide support for students, even when it's outside of work hours, outside of hours in which you're getting, you know, financially compensated. But, you know, these are students that you have a close personal connection with that you don't want to abandon even after, you know, school closes for the day or after they graduate. I mean, you work with so many students across two districts. What are those pressures like for you?
I simply try to make myself available at all times. And so I, like on my email, I connect my cell phone number so that families and students can contact me whenever they need to. I don't always get back to them immediately. I do try to live a life, but I am really able to offer that because being torn between two districts, I can't say, okay, I'm only working for this district Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and that's the only time I'll interact with that school district and the families that I work with. So I try to always be available.
Yeah. Kara, how many teachers and students are involved in this first year of the program?
So this pilot program, we had enough funding to have 8 students. However, I was given the approval, the second week of June, and graduation was literally 3 days away. So it boiled down to having 6 students and 6 mentors. So we have six people participating as students and 6 mentors participating.
We do have a call coming in from one of the former students, now a college student, Bia. Bia, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
So you work with Kara, right? She's your mentor?
Yeah. And, yeah, she is.
And where are you now that you've graduated from high school?
I'm at the University of Wisconsin in Madison.
And well, congratulations. It's a great program. What has the transition to college been like? What are some of like the most fun parts and the toughest parts?
Well, I think like for me, being from a super small town, I was homeschooled for a little bit of high school. A huge transition was being at a big, like really big university, especially like far away from home, because you don't know anybody and you don't know, I mean, any of your surroundings. So I feel like that was a really big part of it.
So when you and Kara Miller check in, what are some of the things that you talk about?
We talk about a few things, just how, I mean, how life is in general, how things are going, how classes are. A few times, like I pay for my tuition, so we'll cover that. Just things like that, how I'm feeling about things. Yeah.
How does it feel to like have that connection to somebody who is back home, someone outside of your family? I imagine that moving somewhere far away like Wisconsin, you could feel a little out there by yourself without those connections.
Yeah, it was a little hard first semester. I think I hadn't made that strong friendships yet, because I mean, when you get to a big school, a lot of things are a little bit surface level. But so it was really nice, like having somebody back home who knew me, knew the things that I was bringing with me here, and just someone who could understand all the things that I was kind of going through at the time and just check in. It was very grounding, I think.
Yeah. Well, Bea, while we have you on the line, Kara, is there anything that you want to say about your relationship with Bea?
I mean, this has been an amazing experience for me. Bea and I, similar to Mary, I started working with students. My old job included working with seventh and eighth graders. So I've known Bea since she was in seventh grade and have worked with her throughout the years. And she's just an incredible kid. And getting to watch her navigate a huge college or university hundreds of miles away with very little support has been just, I'm so proud of her. And I think she's really thoughtful about her education and what makes the most sense for her. And she actually is very grounded. I think sometimes she doesn't give herself enough credit for what she has accomplished and continues to accomplish. So it's just, it's truly a joy in my week to talk to her. I always say like, oh my gosh, it was so good to talk to you. I feel good. She makes me happy.
Bea, you have a big fan over here.
Mutual friendship.
Well, before we let you go, what are you studying in college? What classes are you excited about?
Well, right now I'm actually about to submit.
Oh, Bea, what was that? I think you just cut out. Oh no, Bea, we might have to leave those college classes a mystery. We're losing your connection a little bit, but that's Bea, one of the mentees in this program at Randolph Union High School. Thank you so much for calling in. We have somebody else joining us now, Heidi Schwartz, who is also a mentee with this program, a special educator for 11th and 12th grades at Randolph Union. Heidi, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yes, Heidi, tell us about the student that you're mentoring.
My student is pretty incredible. I was previously his case manager for 11th and 12th grade while he was here at RU. Just incredibly, incredibly brilliant young man who also has some, you know, executive functioning challenges and challenges with reading. So that kind of made him eligible for this program. And he's just awesome, and he's kicking butt. And it's just been so wonderful to, I mean, much like Mary, I like my relationships with my students are pretty deep. So I would have been keeping up with him anyways, but I think this program has just given us both a great opportunity to like really formalize that relationship.
Yeah. What are some of the conversations like that you have with your mentee now that he's off at college out of state, right?
Yeah, out of state. He's at Hobart, William and Smith. We talk about everything. So, like, you know, kind of at the beginning of the program, there was a lot more. So we have a regular check-in on Sunday evenings. That's like set in stone. You know, it's going to happen. And then, like, you know, if stuff comes out throughout the week, he can shoot me a text and we'll make time to have a Google Meet. But, like, we talk about everything from, like, how to, you know, at the beginning it was, like, really accessing, you know, the learning support center at the school and figuring out how to communicate with professors on, like, his specific needs in terms of, like, accommodations. And like, also, one of the things that seems to be the most valuable to him and me, too, is just, like, sharing news from home, but, you know, like, not from his parents. So we spend a lot of time, like, just like, sort of spilling the tea on Randolph Union stuff.
Well, that's wonderful. Lastly, Heidi, before we let you get back to your work, what I want to talk with everybody on this panel today about how to scale a program like this. Do you think something like this mentorship program could be expanded either at Randolph or more broadly in Vermont? And what do you think it would take?
Oh, I am guessing Kara has, like, really specific answers around that. I think it could absolutely be scaled. Like, I mean, I can think of many students who could benefit from a program like this who might not, you know, meet, like, the traditional qualifications, but, you know, do have risk factors for having difficult times. I mean, I think it would be amazing if every high school in the state could have something like this. Mm.
Mary, what are your thoughts there?
I definitely agree with Heidi. I think that especially for multilingual learners who aspire to go to college, that a program like this is integral to their success. We would be working with not only the students, but with their families as well in many cases, and just providing support for the whole picture.
And Kara?
Yes. So when I proposed this idea, I really was specific in looking at some data through VSAC. So the state of Vermont has this goal of getting more kids into college with completion of some sort of degree, whether that's a certification or a 2-year degree or a 4-year degree. And VSAC data has consistently showed that there are certain risk factors that bring about lower rates. So, for example, the graduating class of 2009, when they looked back, they graduated from high school in 2009. When VSAC did a study looking back at their rates, they saw that students who, in their eyes, didn't have any real risk factors. They weren't low income. They weren't first generation college bound students. They weren't ELL students. They weren't on an individualized plan. Those students were graduating from college within 6 years at a rate of 66%. All of those risk factor categories were at least 20% lower in terms of their completion rate. So, for example, ELL students were only graduating at a rate of 32%.
English language learners.
English language learners, yes. Yeah. Students on an individualized education plan or an IEP plan were only graduating at a rate of 20%. Students who are qualifying through free and reduced lunches were graduating at a rate of 46%. So the data is there telling us that these students have risk factors and that are making it harder to complete graduation, and that's within 6 years. I guess what I would say is I think there are a lot of students out there who have a risk factor, and it might not even be identified within these certain categories. And I would love to see a way to support them through to graduation or completion of some post-secondary work. I think the scaling could happen low level in terms of if you're asking me, how do I scale this? I think Randolph, I probably could add a couple more students for sure. And especially given more time and pre-planning, as this program really got off the ground in June of 2023 to work with students starting in August of 2023. I think I could have added probably 5 more kids if I'd had a little bit more planning and time and money to support that work. However, I think the bigger question I would put out there is, how does it scale to the state of Vermont? I think that there's a real possibility here. Vermont is a state with smaller high schools, and I think if you went to any high school across the state, you would find people just like me and Mary and Heidi who care so much about their students, who've worked with them consistently for 4 to 6 years and have true connection and want to see those kids succeed. And so I think the scaling I would love to see in the future is, can this be a program that every school is able to put into operation, choosing, 6 to 8 kids who meet those criteria of risk factors and get to choose their mentor? And that's something that I don't know if we ever talked about, but the heart of this program is that the student chose who they wanted to work with, not the other way around. But it's a mutual reciprocal relationship, as you could hear through our guests. So
the student is invited to participate in the program, and then they get to connect with the student,
yeah,
or with a teacher. Well, Heidi, I know I said I was going to let you go, but one more question for you there. Heidi Schwartz is special educator for 11th and 12th grades at Randolph Union. Speaking specifically about the student that you're mentoring right now, what are your hopes for them other than graduating from this program that they're in right now?
I think my biggest hope for him is that he continues to find ways to just like pull down those barriers around like letting the whole world see just like how brilliant he is and how much he has to offer. And graduating from a really prestigious school like is a great way to do that. But just beyond that, and like those day-to-day interactions with folks and like in like meaningful relationships with people, just that, that people get to know him and see him and love him the way we all do.
Mm. Well, Heidi Schwartz, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Mary Sell, I'd love to hear more about your work working specifically with English language learners. Can you tell us a little bit more about that population in the two school districts that you're working with? I imagine it's not an enormous population of English language learners in that area.
No, both are what they call low incidence areas. So there are, I think I work with 4 in Two Rivers Supervisory Union and 13 here in Randolph. So very low incidence. There are areas in Vermont that have a much higher population of multilingual learners. The challenges, I would say, in the rural areas are obvious, that when you're so few, that the reception isn't always wonderful.
The reception among the community?
Among the community, among schoolmates. It's a tough environment for these families and the students.
And I imagine, though, that because there is a small cohort of English language learners that you're working with, you have the opportunity to connect really deeply with each kid.
Absolutely. It's my favorite part of the job.
Well, one thing we've been following here at Vermont Edition is the issues around school funding that are really cropping up specifically this year. And one thing that keeps coming up in discussions is the sharp decline in federal aid that came in during the COVID pandemic that seemed to really help a lot of schools around our region and the country address increases in mental health concerns and other issues that weren't solely academic, helped schools hire paraeducators. And some of those programs seem to be, you know, quick to appear on the chopping block these days. Kara and Mary, I'd love to hear from you how you have seen Randolph Union change since the pandemic. What kinds of needs are different, and is the school able to address those needs with the resources that it has? Kara.
I think we are seeing students who struggle with technology, students who struggle with anxiety, students who are struggling with other aspects of mental health. That time, you know, when we think back to 2020 and 2021, they were left to manage all of these things as small humans, and they didn't develop some of the strategies that we've been able to teach along the way. And so then their survival strategies are possibly like going on their phone, which then data is showing is just increasing anxiety and depression amongst our adolescents. So I guess, you know, obviously my job is tilted more in the direction of mental health. And what I am seeing is more and more students in need of some sort of service, whether it's just like low level social emotional support or therapeutic intervention. And I'm seeing our community mental health agency being pretty overwhelmed and understaffed and quick turnover. So that's a community issue, but it comes into the school because families see the school, and I think this is true probably across rural Vermont, families see the school as the heart of their community. Mm-hmm. So they turn to us. We have families turning to us to ask for mental health support, and for a while there, we've been able to give it. And now with decreased funding, we might not be able to give it, and we have to potentially set boundaries that are tricky when we've been able to offer certain supports, and now because a position is cut, you don't have the support.
Yeah. And the students who are in this mentorship program now, they were in like eighth or ninth grade the height of the pandemic.
The height of the pandemic, these kiddos were 10th grader. Well, they were ninth graders when school ended, and then they were 10th graders when schools were forced to operate in some sort of hybrid modality.
Yeah.
So their ninth and 10th grade years were very disrupted, and I would argue their 11th grade year still required masks up through, I think, April, was still pretty disrupted. They essentially experienced high school in COVID.
Yeah. Yeah, Mary, how are you still seeing the effects of those COVID years affecting the students that you work with in the ELL programs?
Similar things to what Kara was saying. I see kids coming to school with a much heavier load on them, a much heavier emotional load, and really needing empathy. And that's across the board, not just with my students. I also see a little bit more negative behaviors directed at my students, but that's all part of that whole thing of kids coming with a heavier emotional load and just needing that empathy and support.
Right. Well, I want to squeeze in one call. We have Jay calling in from Randolph. Jay, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. My son is in the program. It was the one Heidi was talking about. He's currently at Hobart and William Smith in upstate New York. And I really just wanted to publicly thank Kara and Heidi for this program. And it's been really successful for us. And we're just very grateful for it.
Oh, Jay, well, thank you so much for calling in. I think that's a perfect place to cap this conversation as well. Kara Miller with Randolph Union High School, thank you so much for coming on and telling us about this program.
Thanks so much for having us.
And Mary Sell, thank you as well.
Thank you.